Tom Steppard's most recent plays have dealt with pivotal moments in history. The Coast of Utopia, his sprawling three-play epic, was about pre-revolutionary Russia. His latest, Rock and Roll, takes a look at the collision of rock music and communism in Czechoslovakia in the years following the Prague Spring. I'm so glad to welcome its three stars, three of Britain's finest actors, Brian Cox, Sinead Cusack, and Rufus Sewell, to the show. I welcome you all back, in fact.
Thank you.
Hi.
Thank you.
Since it deals with so many different issues, I'm curious as to how you would describe Rock and Roll in 25 words or less. Anybody willing to try it?
Whoa!
No.
That's so difficult.
Sinead.
Yeah, thank you, boys. Well, you see, I, of course, would come at it from my perspective. These two men beside me will come at it from theirs.
Well, of course.
But I think the play, to me, the word that springs to mind always when people ask me about this play is it's about the humanness, our humanness, which transcends all systems in the end and is unpredictable, like rock and roll, and can change things because of that very unpredictability. That's my story, well, and I'm sticking
says,
to it.
Yes. That's her perspective. You
well,
can go along with that, can't you, Rufus?
Misleadingly, that I will have my own perspective. I won't. That's mine too. Thank you, Brian.
Yeah, I agree.
Well, and yet, Tom Steppard says that it's really a love story, and that makes sense too. It's a love story on many levels: love of country, of political ideology, of people, going along with what you said, Sinead, and love of rock and roll. And all of that, and all that means, ultimately, because rock and roll becomes a symbol of something quite different to different people here. You were all in the London production, weren't you?
We were.
The usual question is, anything change? Especially since there are certain references that I would assume as to Britain that British audiences would understand, American audiences might not.
Not that much, actually.
Well, we left out some place names. We left out the name. In my case, the name of a school in London.
That people would understand had special significance.
Exactly. But the big difference is we got seven new actors, seven American actors. That was a big difference. Yeah.
There are changes. There are changes in the script.
Pharmaceutical references have been altered.
Yeah. But it's also tighter. You know, it was 3 hours, 17 minutes.
Yeah, wow. We've taken time off.
You know, well, he's famous for changing plays as they're being rehearsed and going into new productions.
It's a much tighter show than it was in London.
And then you had this little break as well because of the strike here. Was that a godsend or was that something that had you going crazy?
Personally, I loved it. I was working very hard, so I was quite happy for the break. But when we got back, it was very hard to get back.
It was a bit of a shock.
It was a bit of a shock.
I mean,
because you'd already gotten into some kind of a rhythm doing the play.
Yeah.
Well, it was being taken out of a show, not being able to perform. The reason we're here is to perform a play. So not being able to perform, I found quite distressing, actually. But I thought it was a really important and defining moment in Broadway history that strike should happen. And we all supported the strike. And it came to a resolution that I think everybody was satisfied with. So, you know, we worked at that.
What about the other actors, the American actors? And nobody would know because these days it seems everybody can do accents so well. In the past, it was usually obvious that an American was doing some kind of a bad British accent. But I probably couldn't tell you who was who. But it does change the rhythm of a play, doesn't it? That you have different actors?
There will be changes. If you work with new actors, that it's not just going to follow some preordained blueprint, that there is a new energy that different people bring in. And I think it's been fabulous, actually. I mean, we came from a really wonderful cast, and we're now in a slightly different, fantastic cast. It's a great new company.
Yeah.
And it's very, very exciting. I mean, personally, I really love working with all the new actors. And one thing that happened through the course of the three-week break was it really was a great reminder of how much we missed doing the play, because I'm naturally a truant. As soon as I found out that school was burning down, I thought, hooray! But then after a couple of chances of being sorted out, and it wasn't, I started after a while, even me, to be panicked. Yeah. And by the time we came back, I was so pleased to be doing the play again with the company that I'd come to really like, you know. So we're very relieved and happy to be back doing it.
There's something great about the young American actors in the play. They have a they have a great visceral sense of what they do, and that's very refreshing. They are not afraid to have an attack about them, and you know, the English counterparts equally great, but sometimes they're more kind of intellectual, as it were. But they're fantastic crowd, the crowd in London. I don't want to do them a disservice, but the refreshing thing about the young American actors is they have a go. They're not afraid to have a go, and it's very touching and moving to see them really just do it, you know.
One of them is Alice Eve, who mm-hmm. plays a number of different parts.
She's not American.
She's
of course.
Not
American. She's also British.
Well, she was in the original cast, yeah.
Now, Stoppard, first of all, I should tell people who I have here: Brian Cox, Sinead Cusack, and Rufus Sewell, three of the stars of Tom Stoppard's Rock and Roll, which is now at the Bernard B. Jacobs Theater at 242 West 45th Street on a theater row. It became apparent to me right from the start that Stoppard assumes that the audience is familiar with history, with the whole thing that happened with the Velvet Revolution, Prague Spring, and its aftermath. How familiar were you all when you started working on this play?
Well, I have to say we were encouraged by Trevor Nunn, our director, and by Tom, to ask the most inane questions for the first 2 weeks of rehearsal.
Who is Dubček?
Along the lines of who was Dubček. I mean, we didn't ask that particular question, but it was along
those
lines.
That you didn't.
We were encouraged to, because Tom did not expect any of us to actually have a thorough grasp. Some had a better grasp than others, but the great thing about Stoppard's work is that through the course of a play of his, you become educated. That's what I've found from a load of young people who've been to see the play. And I say, but how could you possibly enjoy a play that's about Czech politics from the Prague Spring to the Velvet Revolution? And they say, well, we didn't understand that, but by the time we got, you know, they got taken in by the characters and the situations. And by the end of the play, they knew a lot. Mm-hmm. I think that's great.
Yeah, exactly. It's like you say, Tom obviously expects people to have a working knowledge. I'm not sure that he does actually expect people to have a working knowledge. It's just that if he has to start the play with a history lesson, then he can't write the kind of stuff that he wants to write. And I think it's very much the case with Tom's plays that you get what you get and you catch up what you catch up and you don't fret about what you've missed. And if you just have that intellectual confidence of, oh, I missed that bit but I'll catch up, you really get it.
Yeah.
But what all Western audiences will get is the significance of rock and roll in our culture, and then seeing how it might play in a repressive culture and how it might be seen as a threat to the stability of the government is something that they can grasp quite easily. Don't you think?
Well, it was seen as a threat here.
Because they've had to deal with their own parents in some cases, unless their parents were rock and roll fans, saying, you know, you really like this stuff. Do you have to listen to this stuff?
Exactly.
Although they didn't see it as a threat to the status quo. For the communist countries, it seemed that there were a number of different reasons that rock and roll was unacceptable. It was because it seemed to give people license, because it was not promoting the cause, and also because it represented capitalism.
And it wasn't state-controlled until they tried to state-control it. And funnily enough, in America, that's the first, that was the American and the British way of dealing with it. When rock and roll came along, make it corporate. Mm-hmm. It's the same thing that you could do with rap, is you make it corporate and turn it into, you know, product placement, and then you have complete control of it. However, they couldn't find a way of doing that in the communist
regime. Well, some of them, Poland kind of worked it out after a while. Different ones had different approaches, but in Czechoslovakia, because of Prague Spring, the government really started clamping down. Mm. They saw it as a symbol of everything that they didn't want to happen again.
But it was possible to be in a state-sponsored rock and roll band. There was an alternate one.
Yeah, and also, there's two versions of rock and roll. There's the rock and roll of the native rock and roll, i.e., you know, in the in our case, the Plastic People of the Universe, and being the native group of Czechoslovakia.
And they are a real group?
They are, yes. They're an absolutely real group.
They played in Joe's Pub just before we started rehearsals.
Yeah, and they were great. And they're still around. They kind of reform and come back, and mm-hmm. fall out and reform and come back. But also, rock and roll was subversive. Because the English or the American side of it, the English-speaking side of it, I worked in Russia in the late 80s, and quite a lot of the English, the Russian kids, had learnt their language through particularly the lyrics of Lennon and McCartney. So it was always of a subversive nature in that way.
It's interesting because the earlier generation would have learned English listening to Willis Conover playing jazz records, and then it became rock and roll. Then
that's right.
Did it in this case? The key group is the British group Pink Floyd.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Is that because they made records about the dehumanization of people?
No,
I think that's to do with Tom's taste.
It's to do with Tom's taste because he's mad about Pink Floyd. But no, it was the Barrett, Sid Barrett, who I think was part of Tom's inspiration. The story of Sid Barrett, this shining, extraordinary talent who became brain-addled with drugs and abuse, and he retreated to Cambridge. And it was that sort of, you know, the creature who flew too close to the sun. And I think that was part of Tom's inspiration for the play. That story, the story of Sid Barrett.
And we really should point out that this play takes place in two university towns, in Cambridge. And also a university town, I'm not sure I know what it is, in Czechoslovakia.
Charles University.
Mm. Yeah.
Now, Brian, I've heard that your character, Max, was written for you. Is that true?
I don't think it was written for me. I think it was written despite me. No. Sometimes it feels that. No, I think it was, it's hard to say. He wrote it with me as a kind of figure in mind. I don't think he wrote it for me, but he wrote it with my sort of energy in mind. And I think that's really how it came about, as I think Sinead was in the same case.
And Rufus, I think.
And I think that...
So you all were involved fairly early on?
Yeah, well, Rufus, so, of course, had done Arcadia, so it would have been such a huge success.
And also Rufus looks like Tom. Yeah. So
and he is, to some degree, his
casting.
Alter
Except
ego.
Except he's not Jewish. Are you?
No.
But the character you're playing Jewish, although that's not key to him. It just seems to matter to some of the Czech officials.
Yeah, but the thing about having you being used as a kind of daguerreotype for the part. I once discovered that a part they were having in a film was based on me, but they had no interest in me playing the actual part.
Well, the thing that did distress me is that the first stage direction that I read when I opened the script is that Max is described as a bruiser. And this is an opinion that people have of me, but it's like I went to lunch with
only people who've been to pubs with you.
Well, I went to lunch the other day with my son and my grown-up son and a friend of his. And afterwards, the friend says, "But your father isn't at all what you've told me. He's like, he seems rather nice." So,
well, in your case, Rufus, I think we could say that your character is kind of Tom Stoppard's alter ego. He is born in Czechoslovakia, then spends a lot of time in England. Only in your case, your character goes back. Jan mm-hmm. goes back, whereas Stoppard stayed in England.
Yeah, well, Tom himself has described that as a starting point. I mean, I don't think I'm playing Tom's alter ego. I just think that was his way into doing it. You know, so that's taken the pressure off me actually feeling I have to do some kind of Stoppard impersonation.
Oh,
that
no.
would just be nightmarish. So, and it also just made me feel not have that responsibility that I can create whatever character I like without any feeling that I have to do Tom in some sense.
A lot of this plays about ideology. When we come back, we'll talk about the various ideologies that your characters deal with. My guests are Rufus Sewell, who plays Jan in Tom Stoppard's new play, Rock and Roll. Sinead Cusack, who plays two characters, Eleanor and her own daughter, Esme, later. And Brian Cox, who just plays Max. We will continue right after this. Just...
There's something which keeps happening to me. More and more now that I'm getting to be half famous for not leaving the Communist Party. I meet somebody. It could be a visiting professor or someone fixing my car. Anyone. And what they all want to know, but they don't know how to ask because they don't want to be rude, is how come, when it's obvious even to them, how come I don't get it? And it's the same here. I meet some apparatchik working the system, and he's fascinated by me. He's never met a communist before. I'm like the last white rhino. Why don't I get it?
So why don't you?
Don't push it.
Brian Cox as Max in Thomas Bard's latest play, Rock and Roll, which is currently at the Bernard B. Jacobs Theater at 242 West 45th Street. Also with us are Rufus Sewell, who plays Jan, and Sinead Cusack, who plays Eleanor and Esme. And there are a couple of people playing two characters. Well, what Max is talking about there is that he remains truest to his ideology of all the people in this thing, and he is somebody who has not changed his mind about Soviet communism even after the tanks rolled into Prague. He's fully aware of the fact that people criticize him for it or can't understand why he would be that way.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think what, you know, it's apparently it's an unusual... Somebody pointed out there's a program note about Max, which I hadn't read, because I never read program notes, and in which Tom had said that, or somebody had said that this is one of Tom's characters that are truly unrepentant. He seems not to change from the beginning of the play to the end of the play.
Well, but he does change at the end.
Well, he does change. Mm-hmm. Well, he resigns. He doesn't change his beliefs, but he resigns. And he also, a lot of things happen to him. He loses, I always describe it as he loses his religion, but not his faith. And he loses his wife, which is even more important. And what I think is interesting about the play, I mean, Rufus has got the most interesting speech about communism. Ironically, when he says, you know, we were not good enough. And, you know, and I say, you know, why do people go on about communism, how bad it was, when actually there were remarkable achievements? And I think Tom is incredibly fair, you know.
He's even-handed.
He is so even-handed. That's what makes him such a great writer.
Because you would not necessarily know what his politics
exactly
are.
He has no knee-jerk reactions. No, Tom has no knee-jerk reactions politically. He examines both. He loves debate within his play.
But it's interesting that Max is a British communist.
Yeah. He's also, I just want to correct, he's also not a Soviet. He's beyond so. I mean, he's certainly not a Soviet.
Well, he defends the Soviet Union.
He's definitely not a Stalinist. He doesn't defend the Soviet Union. He says quite clearly, I'm pissed off with 9/10 of what happened to Soviet communism. He said, but and what's the 10th? The 10th was they started the revolution. They were the only ones who did it. And I think that's his great dilemma throughout the play, is mm-hmm. the fact he has to defend the undefensible.
But Jan is somebody who grows up doesn't grow up mm-hmm. in a communist situation. In fact, he has an interesting life because his family leaves because they're Jewish. When the Germans roll in, then he goes to school in England,
and
falls in love with
just
England.
Just in time for communism.
Comes back in time for communism, goes back to Cambridge, yeah. And could have stayed. And that's one of the other questions here. Why didn't he stay?
Well, I think the main reason he didn't stay is because his instinct... His natural emotional instinct was just to go home because something terrible was happening at his home, and he was worried. As he says, it's quite simple. He was worried about his mum. He was worried about his friends, and it didn't really occur to him that he wouldn't be able to come out again. I mean, I don't think he seriously thought about it. That his reaction was something bad is happening at home. I need to go home. He leaves his stuff at Max's. You know, he takes his records. He's not going to risk that. But he has, you know, in the corner of his mind, some idea that he's going to come back, and it just doesn't work out that way, the way life is.
Now, before the break, I mentioned that Sinead plays two characters. But in an odd way, you play two characters, too, because you do two accents for the same person.
Well, I play the same character from two different perspectives. I play him as he would be, speaking in his own language with his own friends, and then I play him as from the perspective of him being a foreigner, you know, someone actually trying to break through one language into another to communicate, and that makes a lot of changes to someone.
So you have a Czech accent when he's talking to British people, yes. And then you have a standard British accent.
That has confused a couple of people. I've got some not particularly
really,
stupid
they
friends
haven't
who thought that I'd just forgotten to do the accent for entire scene. And didn't mention it out of embarrassment for me.
Well, that was very nice of them. Yeah. But did you have to work hard on a Czech accent?
Well, I'd spent a lot of time in Prague. The film industry, the American film industry in particular, has moved a long time ago to Prague. And I think since then they're moving on, as the Czech workers cotton onto the fact that they're being done out of millions of dollars, Hollywood moves on to Romania or wherever. But I've
Because Prague is a perfect way of showing pre-war Europe.
That's not the reason.
No, that's not the reason.
Four out of five times that I was there, they didn't film Prague at all. We were in bicycle factories as studios, you know. It was just the fact that you could tell people that a dollar was worth much more than it was.
Cheap labour.
That's the only reason. You could make a $50 million movie for 10 million.
And Sinead, you do play two different parts, a mother and then later her grown daughter. Do you see resemblances between the two?
Oh, I do. I think there is, I think there's a shared DNA there. But when I read the play first, I thought, how am I going to be able to differentiate between these two women so that they are unique unto themselves while at the same time being joined? But Tom has written, it's all there in the words they speak. And I found it very easy and very quickly in rehearsal to get inside the mind of both of those women so that they were clearly differentiated.
And I think that certain playwrights actually emphasize that. And Tom has, when I've talked to him, David Mamet has, they say, you know, I read, you know, do the lines as I've given them to you and trust me. People say that you should do that with Shakespeare, that Shakespeare isn't all that hard. If you just trust Shakespeare, the character will
I think there's
will become
I
obvious.
Think there's a great deal of truth in that. But it's quite intimidating, you know. You think, I find a Shakespeare text when I first look at it very intimidating, and it does require a leap of faith.
Yeah, it's hard to just trust it.
Yeah.
And, quite
and I remember Tom saying to me in rehearsal, I at one point, I think we were about a week or maybe 10 days in, and I said, how am I doing? He said, good. You haven't found the different voices for the women yet. And I thought, no, of course I haven't. I've only done 10 days rehearsal. But yeah. So he did expect very early on for me to find the voices.
Well, you did.
I did, thank you.
And that's Sinead Cusack, who plays Eleanor and Esme. We also have Brian Cox here and Rufus Sewell. We're talking about Tom Stoppard's Rock and Roll, which is at the Bernard B. Jacobs Theater at 242 West 45th Street here in Manhattan. And this is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. One of the things about Eleanor, the wife, is that she's, on an obvious level, she is Max's wife who's dying of cancer, and that's something she objects to. One of the themes of the play is about how easy it is to label someone as a communist academic or a Czech rock fanatic or a woman who's dying of cancer. Mm. And of course, they're not adequate descriptives.
No, and that's her, I mean, that is her argument and her rationale, that her spirit, and the word spirit goes all the way through the play, the importance of spirit, that the material body, the physical body is dying, but that the spirit transcends all that. And that's why she, you know, argues heatedly and with great passion with her husband, saying, am I only my body? No, I'm not. I have so much more that is not physical, that comes from where the muses come from, which is a line of Jan's. So it goes all the way through the play, this idea that, you know, there is an energy that is neither physical nor a system, a political system, that just wins through. And I think it's humanness.
Well, the other thing, too, that happens in the play, which is, I think, a very important thing, which we haven't touched on really enough, apart from the kind of, obviously, the rock and roll and the whole political aspect, is the whole story of consciousness. Mm-hmm. And that's a very key part of the play, the fact that. And that became very, very clear. You know, one of the things that the rock and roll opened the doors to was the notion of consciousness and making consciousness in terms of popular movement. And this is a real trigger for a lot of the events in the play, and particularly the debate on Sappho and the whole mind versus matter, spirit versus matter. And this is a kind of central theme to Tom, not just in rock and roll, but Tom as a writer.
Yeah.
It's the constant thing that Tom is dealing with in his writing. It's the thing that Jan says at the end of the play when he says we need new language. Language is failing us because it doesn't supply it doesn't really deal with the mystery any longer, the paradox of life. And this is where it's a great, to me, rock and roll is a great play, because those themes are the themes that he brings head on. And there are not very many writers doing that nowadays.
Is this a limited run?
We are, yeah. Middle of March.
Oh, but there's still some time.
Oh, there is some time. Come and see it.
And then I assume all of you go back to films, because you've all been in any number of films. Brian, you a lot recently. Zodiac, Running with Scissors, The Bourne Identity. The Supremacy.
Yes, Sinead, theater was just like a holiday for me.
Eastern Promises.
Eight shows a week.
Which David Cronenberg was here recently to talk about.
Oh, did he?
Yeah.
Oh, he's a lovely man. He's been nominated. Oh, they've been nominated for a Golden Globe, which is great.
And Rufus, what are you doing these days when you're not in theater?
Walking around. Basically, sit down sometimes, watching that TV.
What Ruben is doing, he's doing very difficult ADR on Thai films he's made in Thailand.
That's right.
Where he has to.
And I'm not a porn actor, you make it sound like I am.
He has to create all his improvisation that he did.
That's how I'm going to re-improvise my entire performance for a film I did called Vinyan. I've got a film called Downloading Nancy that's going to be at Sundance. I've got a film I did in Thailand. I'm in an HBO series called John Adams, which is coming out next year.
I know who he is.
Yeah.
Yeah. What do you play?
And you're Alexander Hamilton.
And you're buying hats.
That's right. Well, I'm watching them being bought by other people.
I want to thank you so much for being with us today, all of you. Rufus Sewell, Sinead Cusack, Brian Cox, three of the stars of Tom Stoppard's latest play, Rock and Roll, which is at the Bernard B. Jacobs Theater at 242 West 45th Street through March. What a pleasure.
Thank you
very much.
Thank you.